Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. If you love great games and a little extra excitement to your day, I got something fun for you. Chumba Casino and I have teamed up to create an exclusive online social casino game. It's called Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's fun and free to play, just like all your favorites from Chumba Casino. And every spin brings 10,000 ways to keep the good times going. Check it out and play for free today at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Morning. You all right?
That wasn't a jump scare. People don't like jump scares. Some do. How are you though? You all right? Hope you are. Did you have a good evening? Come on, wakey wakey, eck and bakey. Day's half over. Right eyed and bushy tailed, rocking around for the day ahead. Let's do this thing. It's 8 in the a.m. British Summer Time on Wednesday now, isn't it? Wednesday the 12th of August in the year of our Lord, 2026. Eclipse Day. Voting in Clacton tomorrow. It's all going on. It's definitely not a slow news day where they're talking about the same stuff there for the last few days. Last week or more. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm good.
Is Harry real, or is it just a soundboard? He's laughing at that. He is real, I assure you. He's not that little either, it's just we've got an even bigger Harry. He's taller than me, he's bigger than me, little Harry. He's just not as big as big Harry Robinson, that's all. That's plenty of faffing about, isn't it, for one morning. There's no need for that sort of fannying around on a Wednesday morning, is there? Let's just get straight into it. All right. What's the legacy corporate mainstream media banging on about this morning? What is that cabal of evil, oh so evil, truly evil really, Fleet Street editors, trying to tell you isn't or isn't important? What are they lying to us about by omission, if nothing else? All right, we've got Andy U-turns on early release, the early release of prisoners policy. To be perfectly honest, I'm seeing different reports in different media organs. Some saying he is U-turning on it and some saying he's not. Bit of confusion over at number 10. Or number 10 North, as may be. Or a beach wherever Andy Burnham is on holiday. Is he still on holiday? That's cheeky. You coup someone out of power. 2-3 weeks later, you go on holiday. It's the measure of the man, isn't it? Okay, and hunt on for eclipse glasses, because you really should wear like special glasses to look at the eclipse. Really, really should. Especially if it's not 100% eclipse, which it won't be in Britain. But we'll talk about it. We'll talk all about it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm a big fan of that sort of stuff. You know, I love space and things and science and stuff. I saw the last eclipse in 1999. I went all the way down to Cornwall for it. Anyway, we'll talk about that when we get to it. We'll talk about that when we get to it. All right, what have we got here? The Express, the Daily Express. Oh, it's a good paper. You can read your Express now. It's definitely not completely subversive. It's not wearing the skin suit of patriotism, pretending that it cares about the country, and in fact is as globalist, anti-nativist as all the other slop. It's definitely not that. It's a good paper. Just 24 hours after number 10 said it was not possible to keep PC Andrew Harper's killers in prison, PM now says space can be found. Andy U-turns on early release plan. Yeah, but there's other reports today saying that he refused to rule out the possibility that they would just still be released early. So, bit of confusion. It's not clear what's going to happen specifically with the killers of PC Andrew Harper. Overall, the policy isn't going to change. It doesn't look like. What a mad thing. Okay, we'll get into some more details a bit later. Oh, Lucy Davis. You ever watch The Office? The British Office, the Ricky Gervais Office. Dawn. The actress who played Dawn, Lucy Davis. Apparently she's got sort of incurable cancer, breast cancer. And So that's on a lot of the front pages today. I wouldn't bring that up or anything, but it is on more than one front page. So, yeah, Dawn from The Office. She says she's at peace with it, but it's harder on her family than her. She's like in her early 50s. All right, well, yeah. I'd say get well soon, but it's not. I'm not being funny, not trying to be sarcastic there, but it's not. She apparently is terminal. Ugh. All right, poor Lucy Davis. What can you say? Okay, The Guardian. Ugh, The Guardian. Really, really? Are you for real? Is this real? Are you kidding me? Endless socialist subversive slop. Endlessly. We see you. We see it. We see what you're doing. Pretty obvious. Sedition. Absolute sedition. I'd put an end to it if it was me. Harry, can you bring the camera? There you go. Burnham plan to keep PC's killers in jail could backfire, warns unions. Alarm over inmates to be freed comes as probation staff vote to go on strike. Yeah, so sort of probation staff. Yeah, they're very, very unhappy with it all. And there's more talk this morning as well about Andy Burnham and our equivalent of life without parole. We call it whole life orders. And there's a couple other types of imprisonment where it's not necessarily you were given a whole life order in the first instance, but if you just keep reoffending in prison, you sort of effectively could spend your whole life in prison. You know that, right? That can happen. And the wishy-washy liberals, bleeding heart liberals, and traitor communists, socialists, don't like that. So Andy Burnham's looking at removing that, stopping that. It's like, are they a danger to society or not? You're not just let a probation board make that decision. Is it a danger to other people if you let them out into the general population or not? Is that so hard to figure out? Is that such a difficult thing to... Oh, God. Yeah, this early release thing is insane. It really is. It honestly is. Tice using, quote, nasty tactics, quote, to intimidate journalists, writes The Guardian. Obviously, that's Richard Tice. Dick Tice. Dicey Ticey. The story is... Who hates me personally, I was told. Probably doesn't know who I am anymore, but when I was kicked out of Reform, he was the leader. It was before Nigel was the leader. He found out about what I'd written. Found out through Hope Not Hate, because Hope Not Hate, I published in the Mallard. Hope Not Hate got a bee in their bonnet about it. He found out at GB News. An insider told me, and he was furious. Ordered that I was deselected immediately. He was furious that I dare write the policies his party has now got. What a weakling. I think Tice is pretty dumb. Dumb, yeah. Not just sort of like a bit of an oddball. He hasn't got much charisma, has he? I've seen worse, right? He's got more charisma than Starmer, but he's not exactly overflowing with charisma, is he? I think he's quite dumb. You know, not David Lammy dumb. Not Angela Rayner dumb, but not far off. Yeah, and I've never heard him say anything insightful or intellectual or even witty. Not once. That is sort of the measure of somebody, isn't it? Are you even remotely interesting? Remotely, on any level. Never seen anything from him. Never seen a spark from Tice ever. I think he's just a rich guy who wants to be an MP for the sake of it. I think that's all he is. Well, okay, anyway. This article says he uses nasty tactics against journalists, including a Guardian journalist. I mean, when I read the article, it didn't seem that bad. I don't know really what he's done. He didn't even say really what he's done particularly. It's just a general purpose moan. Because The Guardian obviously hate reform and people like Richard Tice way, way more than I ever could. Like, for example, I don't hate Tice. I think he's very, very unimpressive. I don't hate him. Like, I wouldn't wish the worst on him. I wouldn't try and ruin his life and career, whatever. Guardian would. Any little thing. Doesn't even have to be true, necessarily. Nasty tactics. Dicey Tice uses nasty. It's nasty tactics. There's not really anything there, as far as I could tell. Now, they've got a story in The Guardian. The out-group loving Guardian. The Guardian who hates you, if you're white British, native white British, native Anglo in any way, white in any way. They hate you. Anyone who's not that, they love. Look, it's front and centre on their front page. We are still here, a day in the lives of 12 Afghan women. I don't care about Afghan women. Okay? I don't care. I care about my country, my people. What about the problems in our country? What about the problems of all the white native British women feel like they can't go out on the street unless they get raped by a foreign invader? What about those women? What about the ones that already have been? No, we'll just talk about Afghan women. Day in the lives of 12 Afghan women. I don't care. Get it away from me. Get it out of my face. Revolting. Right. The Independent, it's hot. Oh, brilliant. Well done. Great journalism. It's hot. Some Like It Hot. It's a famous film, isn't it? Marilyn Monroe, Some Like It Hot. It's a boomer. You can so tell that all the senior people at these papers are all boomers. Or slightly younger than boomers. All their references are like really old references. Some Like It Hot. UK set for summer record. Okay. Yeah, there's that, a Durdle Door down in Dorset, not a million miles from where I'm sitting. An hour, a couple of hours drive, maybe. Natural rock formation. Actually, I've heard that this beach is quite often just swamped with foreign people now. Indians and Muslims or whatever. They've heard that this is a great natural wonder and we like it and revere it, so they'll go there all the time. Ruining it. Trump hid in catering truck in secret Air Force One swap to fend off Iran assassination threat. Remember we talked about that yesterday? Our poll yesterday. And the story yesterday. A couple of the front pages and a couple of the main websites have picked up on that and reporting that today. In fact, Trump was asked about it yesterday. Like on the tarmac. He often takes questions on the tarmac, doesn't he? With like jet aeroplane turbines whirring in the background so you can hardly hear what's being said, and I don't know why he does that, but alright. But you do it in a good noise environment, Trump, if you're going to take questions from the media. No, you're going to do it next to an aeroplane while its engines are on. Okay, anyway. It's up to him, isn't it? He's the president. He was asked about it, and he just said, look, I just do what the Secret Service say, basically. If they say that, like, he was asked about it, what was the threat? Why did you decide to do that? And he was like, if the Secret Service say there's some sort of threat or they think I should do this or that, I just do it. Which is a reasonable answer. All right, that's fair enough. Isn't it, what other way can you do it? Like the Secret Service come to you. It's their job to be on top of intelligence and threats and everything and protect your person. That's not your job on a day-to-day basis. They come to you and say, there is this credible thing. We think it's best to do this. You'd be mad to go, no, I'm ignoring that. So that's the story, really, and that's all there is to that. Okay. Burnham vows to end throwaway key jail scandal. Yeah, this is what I was talking about the sort of the whole life order things. Andy Burnham has pledged to end the injustice of indefinite jail terms. Wait. Is it an injustice or not? Does the individual involved deserve to be in prison? What are you talking about? Like, as a general sweeping statement, the injustice of it. It might be unjust to let them out into the public where they hurt people. See, this is why This is why socialists, champagne socialist ideologues are dangerous and crazy. Just the injustice of indefinite jail terms. It might not be, it might be the best thing. It might be the most just thing possible. Like a serial killer or a prolific child rapist or something. He's pledged to end it though. Great. Okay. As part of measures to ease prison overcrowding. Oh, right. It's just it's for that reason as well. We haven't even got that many in Britain. Hardly any. Like whole life orders. There's very, very few. I mean, it's like a couple of dozen or something. Really. Our courts very, very rarely hand them out. Even that Axel Ruder Cabana, or whatever. I can never pronounce his surname. I can never remember his surname. Even he didn't get a whole life order. Right? They sentenced him to like 50 or 60 years or something. And even if and when he lives old enough to get there, the parole board may well just slap more time on him. Or the Home Secretary can step in. So we've got very, very few of those whole life orders. But then there's that other thing, like I say, where you might go in prison for just robbing a post office and you get 10 years or whatever. And then in prison, though, you kill someone else or you just keep attacking prison guards or whatever. And they slap another 2 years on, another 2 years, another 5 years. And you basically never get out. Well, you almost certainly will never get out. Andy Burnham wants to stop that. The injustice of that. Is it unjust? Is it though? Okay, Andy Burnham wants to ease prison overcrowding by letting out the worst of the worst, sounds like. And to stop PC Harper's killers from being freed early, the Prime Minister said he is increasingly confident he can find prison space for some high-profile offenders. Options include release of inmates on imprisonment for public protection jail terms, which the Independent has long campaigned to end. Well done, the Independent. Look, have these people committed crimes that deserve that they stay in prison? Yes or no? Yes or no? They're not looking at it like that, are they? Right, the Times, the venerable Times. Burnham will keep going until channel crossings are stopped. Don't believe it. I don't believe it. I don't believe any of that. They are not going to stop the boats. They're not stopping the boats. So Andy Burnham, something like 3,000 foreign invaders, barbarians, who have invaded us since Andy Burnham became Prime Minister just a few weeks ago. And when asked about it again, he said he would just keep going and do what it takes. All that nonsense. Just hot air. I think he says, the gangs have changed their tactics, so we must change our tactics. Well, no, you won't. You haven't. You've got no intention of doing that. I know people will have been worried to see those images yesterday. That's a classic thing. He goes on to say, like, I'm listening to you. I hear you. That's Andy Burnham's whole shtick. I'm listening to you. I hear you. But what's that worth? That's not worth anything if you don't act on it, is it? That's his whole thing, his solemn sort of serious face. I'm listening. I can hear. I hear it. Yeah, I'm on your side. Well, then do something about it then. Call a COBRA meeting. Call an emergency, because it is a national emergency. And do something about it. Nah. Nah. He'll call a COBRA meeting, though. But about how hot it is. I'll bring that up, Harry. There you go. PM to chair emergency COBRA meeting. Oh, about the invasion at Dover. No, amid extreme heat warnings and wildfires. Right, look at his face. He's not a very good actor, really, is he? Tony Blair was quite a good actor. He actually gave you the impression that he was interested and cared and was listening and was sincere and wasn't a dyed-in-the-wool traitor. He was quite good at acting like he wasn't that. Andy Burnham needs a few more acting lessons, I think. I'm not buying that you care, Andy. I'm not feeling that you're really inhabiting the role properly. Okay, so we're being invaded, but they will do nothing about it. You say, I know what I need to do, I can deliver. You can stop them in one day. You can stop them in one day if you wanted to. They don't want to. People will say to me, we don't want these any more crossings. I understand that. Do you though? You get it. But he says he's going to keep going until he's eradicated the gangs. You could send in the special boat service. You could send in 4-2 commando. There's a number of things you could do. Not doing it. Don't believe them. Yeah, I remember the last time I had any faith whatsoever, when Rishi Sunak became Prime Minister, he made his slogan for government, his whole slogan for government, was stop the boats. Suella Braverman is his Home Secretary. Oh, okay, if they're putting it front and centre, it literally seems like their first priority for government. This sort of interim government before there's a general election in 18 months, 2 years, whatever it was. Okay, good, right. Watching then. What are they going to do? Oh, right, nothing. It's pure gaslighting. It's worse than being honest in a way, isn't it? Well, a lot worse than being honest. If they were honest, they'd say, we've got no intention of stopping these small boats. We're not going to secure the border. But they pretend they're going to. What is that? What's the psychology of that? Gaslighting you. Just wait, just give us a little bit more time. We'll keep going. We hear you. We're going to do it. And every day, failing to do it. All right. Look, it's hot. There's a river that's dried up a bit, mostly. Oh, no. So what? And by October, it'll be bursting its banks and flooding the nearby town. Just calm down. Extra safeguards needed for early release, say police. Yeah. Maybe just don't release them. Maybe build, like, one extra prison. Put up prefab prisons. Use a repurposed old barracks or school, disused school or something. Anything rather than letting out dangerous people back into the population. Extra safeguards needed. What does that even mean? What does that mean? You're psychosomatic. Right. The Daily Telegraph. That's nonsense, isn't it? The police say you're going to need extra safeguards if we release loads of murderers and paedophiles and terrorists. An arsonist and thing. What safeguards? What do you mean? What? Just nonsense. All right, the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph. Complete slop. Not interested in saving our demographic. Explicitly not interested in saving us from demographic decline and replacement. Very, very explicitly. Owned by a German Zionist who doesn't think we've got a right to our own country. Israel has, but we haven't. The Telegraph. Right, okay. A far-right fantasy, what I just said there? My crazy far-right person? Or is that a statement of fact, what I just said there? It's a statement of fact. Police unite to fight early release. Unprecedented letter reveals forces' anger at inability to keep PC Harper killers in prison. The inability. See, you saw earlier, one of the early ones, they're saying Andy Burnham will do what it takes. He's confident that he can do what it takes to keep these two killers in prison. And then they're saying that the police themselves are angry because he won't be able to. His inability to. Which is it? Of course, if he really, really wanted to, he could make sure they stayed in prison. Okay. Total Eclipse, your guide to a once-in-a-generation event. Should we talk a little bit about the eclipse? A bit of a palate cleanser for a moment from all the black pills. So yeah, there's going to be an eclipse today in Britain, if you're in Britain. The further west you are, the better it will be. You're right on the Western Isles of Ireland, like right on the rest of Ireland, that's probably the best place. Right on the tip of Cornwall, that's probably the best place. Where I am here in Wiltshire is not too bad. It's not 100% eclipse. In fact, got a thing here. Let me think. Yeah, bear with me. Boom. There you go. Nice clear. Look, that's where you would see 100% of an eclipse if you were there out in the Atlantic. But if you're like here or even here, you know, in Ireland, you get 95, 96% eclipse. If you're in London, a little less than that. Which is still not bad. Now, as I mentioned earlier, my little story, there was a full eclipse if you were in Cornwall back in the year 1999. I was like 18 years old in the summer. Staying out for the summer. Went down there. Me and some mates went down there. A little camping trip down to Perranporth in Cornwall. And saw the 100% eclipse with my own two eyeballs. Amazing it was. It really is quite a surreal experience. 100% one is anyway. It's really quite surreal. It didn't just go like a bit dark. It went really quite dark briefly. Not all that long, only a few minutes. But you might think, oh, it's dimmed a bit. No, it goes like almost as dark as, not quite as dark as pitch black night, but nearly. And yeah, that thing of all the birds twittering, they all go silent. That's true. That happened as well. It's like eerily silent. And it got sort of noticeably cold. It didn't get cold. It didn't get like the middle of the night cold. But you noticed there it was noticeably colder. And just surreal. It was surreal in the middle of the day as well. We're standing on cliffs in Cornwall. Looking out to sea. You could sort of see the darkness come towards you across the sea. Kind of. That was surreal. I remember that. That was kind of surreal. To see way out on the horizon that the ocean seems to be a bit darker over there, and it's like racing towards you. Remarkable. And then when you look up, the other thing I remember clearly, I was looking for Bailey's beads. You know what that is? When an eclipse, just as the moon comes perfectly over the sun, we won't get that this time because it's not 100% one. 100% one's the best thing. When the moon goes over the sun, just as the last moment before it completely covers the sun, and at the first moment when it moves away from completely covering the sun, the rays of the sun will shine through the mountains and valleys on the moon. And the peaks of those mountains will still be obscuring the sun, but the dips, the valleys in the mountains won't be. So for a moment, instead of getting a crescent of light coming back, you get a few dots of it coming back. Bailey's beads. You're seeing through the lunar valleys. I think it's unbelievable, remarkable. I love it. Most incredible thing I'll probably ever see with my own two eyeballs, unless I go somewhere else in the world for 100% solar eclipse again and get lucky enough that it's not cloudy. That's the other thing. You're waiting for the eclipse. You're all stoked for the eclipse. And just where you are, it's all cloudy. That's it. You don't see it. Sounds obvious when you say it out loud, right? But you also need it not to be cloudy. So, all right. All that said, my little 1999 story. This one will get, in most of Britain, something like between 90 and 96% one. So there's still a big slither of the sun. So you can't really, honestly, you can't really just look at that with like your unprotected eyes. Like, yeah, I will say that. You can damage your eyes if you do that. You think, oh, I'll look at it for a little bit, like a few seconds. My eyes can stand it for a few seconds. I wouldn't risk it, to be perfectly honest. Try, if you want to see it, you know, try and get some of these glasses, these special glasses. Or there's a couple of, in my opinion, much lamer way of doing it. You can sort of project it onto a bit of paper. And there's all sorts of articles and websites. Just Google it. There's various other things you can do to see, like, basically a projection of it. But if you want to see it with your actual eyes, I would get those glasses. I was looking at even like 5% of the sun directly. Don't risk your eyesight. Come on. That's not worth it. Anyway, it's a remarkable thing. It's a remarkable thing. One thing I would say, today as well, to let you know the time, it sort of starts at about 6 p.m. because it takes a while for the moon to move, of course. Starts at about 6 p.m. and it'll be at its height about 7 p.m. Depending on, all this is depending, is only roughly and depending on where you are in Great Britain. By about 7 p.m., 7:15 p.m. is when it's if you're down in Cornwall or you're in Wiltshire or somewhere, you're in southern England, around then. So, early evening. Early evening. Between 6 and 7. Go outside. Hopefully it's not cloudy. Hopefully you've got a pair of these little glasses. You go outside and you can see one of the most incredible celestial wonders you're ever likely to actually see. It'll be 60, 70 years or something before it happens in Britain again. So, all right, okay. Should we move on? I love all that sort of stuff. I love all that sort of stuff. Okay, middle class areas must house migrants. Says Burnham. This is Burnham. Number 10 North. Now, I've said before, haven't I, that I don't like accelerationism, but I'm not 1,000% against it. Right? There's a 5% of me is accelerationist. It's hard to put a percentage on it. Broadly speaking, I'm not for accelerationism. I want my country and my people to be damaged, hurt and wounded as little as possible. But I do get the argument. I completely understand the argument that it has to get worse before it gets better, that millions, even tens of millions of normies have still got their heads in the sand like ostriches. They need to be woken up. They need to be shaken awake. Or they'll vote. Because there's no militias, there's no civil, it's not, people aren't going to march on Whitehall and depose the government like it's 1917. That's not happening. If we are to save our country, it will have to be at the ballot box. We're not voting our way out of this. Vote harder, Lamau. Well, there's no other way. Are those vote harder, Lamau people going to form any sort of, they're going to actually overthrow the government in any way? No, of course they're not. No, those are coward people that say that. So, it has to be at the ballot box then, doesn't it, really, realistically? So we need millions, tens of millions of people to vote the right way, vote in their own interest, their own national and even ethnic interest. Well, they need to be woken up. These millions of normies who insist that they haven't noticed, sort of insisting, they haven't noticed we're being invaded, murdered and raped on an insane scale. Well, if it takes the Labour Party smearing these barbarians into their middle class areas, that's what it takes, then so be it. Good then. All these Lib Dem voters, all these champagne socialist middle class people, I think, oh, it's only horrible racist bigots from inner cities that would dare vote, even dream of voting for reform or restore. Talk about mass remigration. Well, you live next to a house full of Somalis. And you'll wake up real quick. They're abducting and eating your pets, a goose or a swan from the local park. Yeah? Sudanese people. Rural Indian shitting in the street. Oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear. Sorry about that. Any little kiddies in the room? I'm sorry. I'm a natural swearer. If anyone watches State of Politics, my natural inclination is quite a potty mouth. Sorry. It's not that I dial it up in a phony manner for State of Politics. I'm dialing it down for this. Trust me, I'm dialing it down for this. That's me more au naturel on State of Politics. Anyway, sorry. Shouldn't say the S word, sorry. These middle-class Lib Dem voters, Tory voters, that still don't seem to understand the problem because they've never been confronted by a community of Bangladeshis, say, community of Nigerians. And they're completely alien ways and culture that's antithetical to you, puts you and your family in danger, that they're hostile to you and us. They're not here to integrate. They've got no intention of integrating. They've got no intention of being kind or nice to you. Quite the opposite. You may well find there's organised crime very, very quickly. You may well find that street crime, violent street crime and or sex crime suddenly goes through the roof. As I say, I'm not an accelerator. I don't consider myself an accelerationist. I want my country and people to suffer as little as possible. But if that's what it takes for tens of millions of these normies to wake up, to what is being done to us, then okay, this measure might actually make a world of difference to us on the right, on the truly patriotic nativist right. Andy Burnham saying, what the story is, Andy Burnham saying that where they're going to, you know, trying to make sure that all these migrants, these thousands, tens of thousands of migrants a year, just the illegal ones, not going to put them in hotels anymore because people didn't like that. People didn't like constant headlines of how much it costs us to put in hotels. So we'll put them in HMOs. But Andy Burnham says, we're not going to do that just to the poorest communities. That wouldn't be fair. Just to only put all these invaders into just the poorest communities. No. We'll put them into all areas, including middle class areas. There's literally a quote where he says, even middle class areas must do their bit. Okay. Again, imagine you live in a rural, semi-rural area and it's just 100% white. 100% white, much as it has always been. It's like a quaint little cricket ground in the village green. And everyone's extremely civilised and polite and nice and English. And they whack a HMO in the middle of it and fill it with a dozen Afghans. Right? And they start doing crime. And they start doing crime right away, bad crime. They start perving on your kids. They start hanging around the playground and outside the school, the primary school. Anyone says anything to them, they threaten to stab them. Okay. Hopefully that changes the mind of these middle-class voters. Hopefully they'll start voting for a party that talks about that millions must go. I can only hope. I've honestly got my fingers crossed that this particular policy, this bridge too far, if you like, will actually make a real difference at the ballot box. Where hopefully loads of constituencies will go to Restore or Reform. Or whoever. Other than the parties that seem committed to flooding us with endless, literally endless, there's no cap. They refuse to put a cap on migration. So endless. An endless influx of people that hate us and mean to do us harm. I hope so. I really do hope so. All right. The Metro. Oh, the Metro. That is revolting. What is that? I don't even know what that is. Some disgusting piece of carrion on the ground. Some revolting mess. You can barely see what it is, or what it once was. Ugh, it's hurting my stomach. The Metro, pure subversion. All right. Dustbins hustings. Count versus Farage in our Q&A exclusive. All right, yeah, so, It's the actual vote day, isn't it? Polling day in Clacton tomorrow. As I said at the beginning of the week, hopefully we'll have the result for you Friday morning. I can't imagine there'll be a recount. Who knows? But or more than one recount. So we should have the result for you on Friday morning. France will win it by a landslide. Of course he will. No one's interested in Lawrence Fox. No one's interested in Lawrence Fox's Civ Nattery. Sort of lovey, weak-wristed, weird worldview. Kai Steve, it'd be nice if Kai Stevens won, wouldn't it? He's not going to, I'm afraid. Count Binface is polling reasonably well for a joke. He won't beat Farage, not even close. Farage was absolutely stonky. There's no two ways about that. Okay, so all a bit of a joke, really. Then they can restart that parliamentary investigation into him. And he'll try and say, none of that matters because I've gone back to the good people of Clacton and got their blessing. So none of that matters. It will, though, still, Nigel. It will, though, still. It could trigger another by-election in Clacton. I still think it's an odd gambit, an odd move by Nigel to call this by-election before that investigation was finished. He thinks he's going to draw a line under it all. It'll all go away, and he can make the argument that there's nothing to see here because he went back to the people of Clacton and stood against Binface and Lawrence. No, it doesn't make that go away. I just think I would not have done it. If I was even found myself in Nigel's position, I would not have made that move. Just let the investigation play out first, and then start thinking about making moves. Start thinking about making a move, some sort of political move, straight after the conclusions come out of that inquiry. Be ready with your strategy once the final conclusions come out. But to try and get ahead of it like this, it doesn't add up to me. It doesn't really add up. Because it just doesn't put the lid back on it. Does it? Okay. The Black Wednesday shopping scramble. It's not Black Friday, it's Black Wednesday. They're saying there's not enough of these glasses, these special eclipse glasses. So many people want them that they're running out and there's a scramble for them. Black Wednesday. Bit of a stretch from the Metro. What do you expect? They're not great journalists, are they? The Daily Mail. A wolf in sheep's clothing. The Daily Mail. Wearing the skin suit of a patriot. Or a nativist, trying to pretend sometimes that they care about this country and our people, when in fact they show their true colours very regularly that they don't. They're globalist. Anyone who is trying to stop the demographic decline and replacement of our people in our one and only ancestral homeland, people that talk about that want to try and prevent a sectarian nightmare along racial, religious and tribal lines, trying to prevent Britain from descending into a Lebanon, Yugoslavia type hell situation. The Mail will try and destroy those people. Try and ruin their reputations and lives and livelihoods. Don't trust them. Don't think they are actually right of centre or anything like that. Don't think they're patriotic or anything. It's just red meat to try and sell papers. All right, Lucy Davis, poor Lucy Davis. She's terminally ill. Okay. As small boat arrivals under new PM hit 3,000 just in like a few weeks, and unrest grips rural towns, Burnham, middle class areas must take more migrants. Is it the little bit of acceleration we need? It might be. It might be. Middle-class areas will have to take in more migrants, Andy Burnham said last night. Yeah, let these Lib Dem voters and middle-class Labour voters see what it really means to live next to third worlders that have got no intention of integrating or even really learning English much and that are involved in organised crime or just street crime. Let them see what that really means. And it's not just made up by far-right bigots that it's a problem, that it's an issue, that it's not desirable. Let them live next door to a house of Eritreans who do nothing but make you feel unsafe and, in fact, make you unsafe. Maybe it's the little bit of accelerationism we need. All right, the IR paper, summer 2026 will be UK's hottest since records began. It's going to be hotter than 1976. Is it hotter? 1976. You could boil an egg on the bonnet of a car in 1976. The tarmac was melting in 1976. The Financial Times. Oh, Assad's cousin. This is quite interesting. A real story. In Syria, one of Assad's cousins, who was head of, is described as political security, who's head of political security. Does that mean secret police? If you were too vocal against the Syrian regime and the Assad family, would this guy or minions of this guy come round and make you disappear? May well torture you to death. I'm no fan at all of the current Syrian regime. Don't get me wrong, not at all. But the Assad family weren't great. They weren't good people, really. Still, it's a difficult job to try and rule over that part of the world. That part of the world has always been a dangerous part of, always been a dangerous part of the world. A crossroads of the world in various ways. That bit of land that today we call Syria had many names over the millennia. A crossroads of all sorts of people, from Africa and the Arabian Peninsula and Mesopotamia and Persia and Central Asia, the Central Asian steppe, and of course from the Balkans and from sort of the Caspian area, all come together in that bit of land today we call Syria. Yeah, always been a land of conflict, always. Really, always. So it's like a poison chalice to try and rule over that. It's always going to be difficult if you don't have a strong man. It will be chaos. Anyway, again, I'm just said I'm not a fan. I'm not playing defence on behalf of the Assad family either. Anyway. Assad himself is in exile, isn't he? Is he in Russia? I believe he lives in Russia, doesn't he, with his wife. Is that right? Anyway, one of his cousins that they obviously got. He got. And he's in a cage now. And he's just been sentenced to death. As was Bashar al-Assad in absentia. If the Syrian regime ever got their hands on him, he would be executed, it seems. He was sentenced to that in absentia. Anyway, an actual story, at least. An actual story. All right. The Star. Yeah, actress Lucy Davis doesn't know how long she's got left. Okay. The Sun, again, The Sun, they go with Lucy Davis. She's got incurable cancer, but she's at peace. Sorry to hear it. Okay. I mean, all the old tabloids, they're all going with Lucy Davis's bad diagnosis. All right, they're the front pages. They're the front pages for today. All right, should we have a look at our poll? We did a poll. We do a poll every day. Most days I forget what me and Harry said we'd do right at the beginning of the show. At like 7:30 in the morning. An hour and a half later, I always forget. Okay, what have we got here? Harry's going to bring it up for me. What have we got? Oh, we asked you guys, are you interested in the eclipse? Just wanted to get a feeling if you guys are interested. We've got over 1,150 odd votes on that. We gave you the options of yes, a bit, not really, and not at all. Oh, and the yes, the ayes have it. It's pretty much in that exact order. So not at all, only 9%. Who are you guys? Get out. You're not welcome here. Go on, bugger off. This is the wrong show for you. Don't go. I didn't mean it. I'm joking. That was a joke. I still love you. We can make this work. 9% say not at all. 19% say not really. 32% say a bit. And coming out on top with 40% of you say just straight up yes. Okay, good. Nice. I do think it also that people say not at all. Really? What? Are you actively not interested? Like if a full 100% solar eclipse was happening outside your house, someone said, quick, come outside. You can see one of the most remarkable things your eyes will ever see, for real. You just need to step outside right now. You'd be like, nah, nah, I'm watching TV. Nah, not interested at all. I don't know. Okay. I don't understand. Don't understand. All right. What else have we got? Oh, a quick little update on the Tates. The brothers Tate. They're Islamic converts. Well, Andrew says he is, isn't he? UK prosecutors in America argue that the Tate brothers are a flight risk ahead of bail hearing. So ever since they were arrested the other week, they have been held effectively on remand, what we call remand, just held in prison. And then the British are trying to extradite them to Britain to face trial for alleged crimes. The CPS, the Crown Prosecution Service, wants to put them on trial in Britain. So we have to extradition proceedings. The court in Florida had to look at whether they can be released on bail while all that goes through. And the lawyers for the prosecution or for the extradition said, no, you can't let them out on bail because they'll just go to another country. They'll just flee. And apparently a judge at the moment, and a US judge in Florida, is considering that one way or another at the moment. So only a small update really on the brothers Tate and their legal problems. Well, we'll see. When Andrew Tate was gloating about that a super mosque might be built in the Trocadero right in the middle of London, right near Piccadilly Circus, he went from someone I mildly disliked, wasn't particularly interested in, to somebody I actively disliked. When he did that, when he came out with that take. Gloating about it. Like, you're a political enemy of mine then, Andrew. We'll see if he gets extradited to Britain, then what sort of case the CPS bring against him, and then see if he's guilty of any very, very, very serious sex crime. All right, let's see what else we got. Oh yeah, they're saying Burnham hasn't got any balls. I think it was Nigel who said Burnham hasn't got the balls to stop the small boats. Yeah, look, here's an opinion piece in The Express. Burnham needs to grow a pair. Tell us killers will not be locked up. Just do it. Burnham needs to grow a pair. He's got on the Sun, small balls crisis. Burnham doesn't have the balls to deal with boat crisis. Slams Farage after 230 illegal migrants. So the size of Andy Burnham's balls are in question at the moment. Yeah, you know, to be a leader, metaphorically, let's not talk about his actual physical real-life testes. Let's not go there. Metaphorically, politically, his balls politically. To be a leader, you do need some balls, right? You do need a bit of backbone, a bit of spine, a bit of guts. You need trousers, yeah? You need to be able to make really quite difficult decisions, even morally ambiguous decisions, where it's not clear. There isn't one right answer. Certainly that won't please everyone. Need to be able to do that fearlessly over and over and over again. Not just wring your hands. Yes, we're listening. We're going to try to. No. Need someone who's decisive. That's what Keir Starmer wasn't, wasn't it? That's what Keir Starmer's ultimately his problem was. Is that when faced with any real big decision, he was just like this mumbling, bumbling, pearl-clutching, nothing man. Oh, I don't know what to do. Okay, I guess I'll make this decision. Oh, no, my own backbenchers and the papers don't think it's a good decision. All right, I'll just U-turn on it then. Okay. No. That's completely wrong. You want someone with a vision and a view, and sometimes they'll make decisions you don't like, even if they're your fan, and 90% of the time they do what you would like to see done. Sometimes they won't, though. That's a leader. Burnham's no leader of men, is he? Andy Burnham. No sternum Burnham. He hasn't got the sternum for it. He's barely a man, really, isn't he? He's a Fabian wet rag. He's an empty shirt. He's a nothing man, a nowhere man. A child. Like a student activist. At best. He's weak. A weakling. Ugh. All right, should we move on? Should we do on this day in history? 5 to 9, why not? I'm on the main podcast today, so can't be here all morning. Tune in at 1 p.m. for that. Do like this stream, by the way. Give it a thumbs up. Double thumbs up, fan Debbie Dozy. Make sure you're subbed to the channel. Get the bell on. All right. On this day in history, the 12th of August, down through the centuries, nay, the millennia, what happened of note? Okay. On this day in the year 1121, the Battle of Adigori, might be pronouncing that incorrectly, which is the Georgian army under King David the Builder, wins a decisive victory over the renowned Seljuk commander Ilghazi. No idea how to pronounce that. I don't even know about that battle in any detail. Why would a 12th century battle between the Seljuk Turks and Georgian people? One thing I will say is I know a little bit about Georgian history, but not going back that far. I've done a long form series on my own channel, History Bro, there. There's no paywall there. You can go there. Got a long full series about the young Stalin. Hours and hours and hours. Was it a 10-part series? I can't remember. Hours and hours and hours talking about the life of Yusuf Yugashvili. The loper. The milkman. The pockmarked one. Korba. Stalin. From his early life through to 1917. Hours and hours and hours just on that. Do you want to know what the childhood was like of Stalin? Comrade Korba. He had many, many names. Yugashvili was his real name. Anyway, in that, I talk all about Georgian history for a bit. Sort of 19th century, 18th into 19th century Georgian history to set up the world in which Yusuf Yugashvili was born. Uncle Joe. And, well, Georgia has always been a bulwark, a stalwart against the incursions of Islam. To this day, they're very, very, very Christian, very proud of it. Explicitly not Muslim. It's where the Muslim holds the higher tide in that part of the world, in that region. Crashed against an impenetrable wall of Christianity. The Seljuk Turk. Muslims. Okay, all right. On this day in 1480, Ottoman troops conquer Otranto in southern Italy after a 15-day siege, killing 12,000, enslaving 5,000, and beheading 800 Christians for refusing to convert to Islam. That's odd. I thought it was a religion of peace. Is it not a religion of peace? That's what David Cameron said. That's what Obama said. Is that not true? Is that not? Did they mislead us with that characterization? Oh, I guess so. On this day in 1851, American inventor Isaac Singer patents his famous sewing machine. I think to this day, aren't there Singer sewing machines? Is there to this day? Yeah. Okay. Very mildly interesting factoid, that one. But okay, there you go. Oh, look, the Model T Ford. On this day in 1908, Ford Motor Company builds its first Model T with Henry Ford himself, which Henry Ford himself tests on a hunting trip to Wisconsin and northern Michigan. Yeah, the Model T, which you can have it in any colour you like, as long as it's black. That was one of the things Henry Ford said. Henry Ford's a very interesting person. Not great, not necessarily a lovely guy, but very interesting life, very interesting person, Henry Ford. The Model T. I think if I had Bill Gates' money, I might own a Model T. Wouldn't probably drive it around much. I'd keep it in like a some sort of show garage, but I think I'd like to own one just for the sake of it, as a piece of massive objet d'art, basically. Interested in that. Okay, all right. On this day in 1981, Don Estridge unveils the company's first personal computer, the IBM PC, at New York's Waldorf Astoria Hotel, priced at $1,565, with a massive 16 kilobytes of RAM, helping to bring computing to the masses. $1,500 for 16 KBs. Got to start somewhere, aren't you? Got to start somewhere. There you go, 1981. Soon after I was born, I was only, 2 days old when that happened. Born into the computer age. Oh, sorry, born before the age of the personal computer. Old school. Old school, the old analog world. Yeah, most of my childhood, and even early teenage years, no one had a computer at home. No one. You go in someone's house, go around there for dinner or whatever, there's no computer in the corner. No one's got a laptop. No one's got a mobile phone. No one. No one. They just weren't a thing. Even into the early 90s, you might once in a blue moon see a rich person, very rich person, with a massive brick of a mobile phone. But essentially all normal people, certainly any working class people, I was brought up very working class, no one had a mobile phone. No one. I was born and raised into an old world that just doesn't exist anymore. Just doesn't exist. That's a mobile phone at all. Not a smartphone. Even the old Nokias, where you just could only send text messages and get phone calls on it. Even those didn't exist, I mean. The idea of a smartphone, when I was a kid and even an early teenager, the concept of a smartphone, where you've got a touchscreen thing in your hand and access to a worldwide web that has effectively got all the knowledge of human civilization on it, and all you need to do is touch the screen, there'll be hyperlinks and links to almost anything you want. Almost anything you want. All knowledge, almost. Anything you want to buy connects to almost anyone. That was in your hand. That was sci-fi. That was beyond what they had in Star Trek. Like the old communicators in Star Trek. A modern smartphone is way better, more advanced than that. It was pure sci-fi. In fact, even sci-fi writers wouldn't go that far to describe such a thing, really. Perhaps in thousands of years, you might dream of something like that. I look at older people, older than me, people that are in their, now, that are in their 70s or 80s, right? And they were born into a world where it was pencil and paper and typewriters. And you'd phone up and get an operator. Hello, operator, can you put me through to them? They grew up in that world. They grew up in a world where you'd have to go to the end of the street and get a pail of coal from the coal board and take it home. A world where a lot of people might not have a telephone at all in their home. At all, even a landline. A lot of people, poor people. Crazy, isn't it? And you get the modern day Zoomers, and they take it all for granted, and it's not their fault. I'm not throwing any shade at them. That's the way it always is. The younger generations take what they grew up with as completely for granted. How could they not? How could they not? There's no criticism of Zoomers there, but you can never really describe that world to them. I mean, you can describe it, but they can never really understand what it was like. But on the TV, there's 4 channels. And then at night, at like midnight or whatever, all the programming stops and there's no TV all night long. No TV. If you wanted some sort of entertainment, you picked up a book. You would have to pick up a book or have a conversation with someone in real life. Not that long ago. It's not long ago. I'm only 45, right? I'm not that old. But, God, the exponential acceleration of progress. Like that curve's just going almost vertical. what when I'm truly, when little Harry, who's a 21, when he's an 80-year-old man, what will the world be like? You almost can't guess. If I, in 1991, could barely dream of a smartphone, or couldn't dream of a smartphone, no one did really. It was just sci-fi. And what, like 30 years later, it's a thing. 35 years later. In another 60 years from now, what will we have? We will be the computers. You'll have some sort of chip in you at some point, some sort of retina thing hooked up to your brain. And you can just think about the internet and it brings up a screen inside your own vision. I don't know. That's just a guess. All that was just a guess. Computers will be so important to us, the internet, so integrated, that we become it, in a way. Cybernetics, the beginnings of becoming a cyborg, becoming completely integrated with it. People are almost integrated with their phone, right? I make a point of not being on my phone all the time. I make a very deliberate point of it, of not going on Twitter most of the weekend and stuff like that. But a lot of people, younger people particularly, it's beyond addicted. It's not an addiction, is something you might be able to kick. No. They've got their phone in their hand at all times. At all times. If they're not actually actively on it, it's on them, physically on them. I walk away from my phone. Often leave it in another room. Don't want to see it. Don't want it. But a lot of people are not like that. If you said, look, we can put a chip in like the back of your neck, in your spine. We can do some sort of retina scan thing and a chip in your brain. And you can just surf the internet inside your own mind. And it brings up a display inside your vision. Wouldn't lots of people just say, yes, please, just hook it to my veins. Shut up and take my money. All right, bit of a tangent there. Should we? What am I blathering on about? Let's get back. Wait, where am I? What's going on now? What year is it? Where are we? All right, let's have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats. Let me do this with my mic so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. Is Global Church History going to be in at number one? Yeah, he is. He is in at number one. Global Church History. He got two factoids for us here. Today in 1099, B.L. Godfrey defeated the Fatimids at Ascalon. Oh, brilliant. Lovely. You're talking about Godfrey de Bouillon, the First Crusade. Do you think I've got long-form content all about the First Crusade on my history theme show, Bodega's Epochs, that's behind the paywall? Do consider signing up at lowcetus.com for as little as £5 a month, from the same membership. Do you think I've got long-form content there talking all about the First Crusade? Oh, yeah, for sure. Godfrey de Bouillon, the Battle of Ascalon. So that's like that's the end of the First Crusade. That's the final act, in a way, in the First Crusade. The Crusaders, all the greats. Bohemond of Taranto, Raymond of Toulouse, Godfrey de Bouillon, Tancred, all the greats are there. They get to remarkably take Jerusalem. And the Fatimids, the sort of Egyptian, North African, Muslim empire, sends an army twice the size of Godfrey's to Jerusalem to take it back. And they clash at Ascalon, which is on the coast. And even though the Crusaders, the Franks, the Christians, are outnumbered, the Latins outnumbered 2-1, we still smash them up. Because knights in the late 11th century are just way better than your average Fatimid soldier. Like, way better. Like, they're almost like a tank on the battlefield, can't be hurt, almost. So like 1,200 knights and 9,000 foot soldiers. Smashes up 20,000 Fatimids, easy peasy. Right. What else we got here? Your second factoid from Global Church History. That's his real name. That's what he was christened. His mum and dad decided to call him his Christian name Global. And they chose as a middle name for him Church. And their surname was his History. On... Of course, that's a joke. On this day in 1812, Wellington entered Madrid. Ah, the Peninsular War. Do you think I've got all sorts of content? More than one episode all about the Peninsular War, talking about it for hours and hours and hours on LotusEaters.com. Yes, I have. The Peninsular War. Wellington and the British Army helping the Portuguese, first liberating Portugal and then all of Spain from Napoleon's legions. Yeah. Although, where we enter is at the Battle of Salamanca. I talked about that one before, didn't I? When Wellington's watching the battlefield and he sees the French marshal make a tiny mistake and he's like, by God, that will do. And then we win the Battle of Salamanca, leaves Madrid open. He marches into Madrid. But he has to leave later that same year. Like by October 1812, Wellington has to retreat from Madrid as the French rally and push back. But then it's only like a less than a year after that we retake Madrid again and don't lose it that time. The Peninsular War was a real ding-dong back and forth. Real back and forth. Massive swings in fortune. But after we took Madrid the first time, that sort of broke the back of the French in Spain in a couple of different ways. There were many more battles, big battles even. All right, good old Sir Arthur. The Lord Wellington, rather. Old Nosy. Okay, do you think I've got content just about him, just about his life? Not just the Peninsula, but all about him as well. Yeah. Multiple parts, yeah. Okay. Geoffrey Farnell says, there's an old BBC documentary series called Empire Warriors about the period of decolonisation. Mad Mitch in Aden, Malaya, the Mau Maus, etc. That was in Kenya, wasn't it? It's remarkably even-handed for the BBC and actually good. Oh, well, interesting. I'll check that. Yeah, the BBC wasn't as insane and subversive as it is now. It's always been left-leaning and a bit subversive, but nowhere near as bad as it is now. Nowhere near. You find some old BBC documentary from even the 90s, if not older than that, it'll be probably quite fair-handed and reasonable and like a good thing, probably. You might still get a slight taint, but now it's just completely mask off insanity, isn't it, the BBC? They seem like they can't make a documentary unless it's anti-white, anti-Western, anti-British. They're just completely captured by our enemies. But yeah, if it's an old one, it might be good. Yeah, a lot of old BBC documentaries are very good. That's true. Okay, Pigdog5150, the next three are all you, so I'll read them in one go. Morning, work morning. You say you worked finance for 20 years, left to become a farmer. Oh yeah, you mentioned yesterday you were a farmer, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm a farmer, that's interesting. Left to become a farmer, no big deal, don't like to brag about it. Got to leave some for everyone else. Get enough attention from the ladies and tax man as it is. Then you put mostly the tax man. Then you put only the tax man. With the crying and laughing faces. Okay. It's quite funny. Oh, and the next one's also picked up. It says, quote yesterday attributed to Solomon, Ecclesiastes 7.1 or 7.1. All right. Okay. That was a good quote yesterday, wasn't it? That's supposed to be King Solomon, is it? Just last week, I listened to the audiobook of King Solomon's Mines by H. Rider Haggard. So it's only a story. It's only a boy's own novel. It's not nothing to do with real history or anything, but it's funny you should mention King Solomon. Okay. And his many wives. Okay, the next two are Fallen Firebird. You say, our normie problem is largely a lack of imagination. Normies drift through life almost unaware that civilizations can do and will end. History is always looking for its next victim. Very profound thing to say. Can't fault you on that. And then you put, also, Bo, another novel check. How's your writing going? Been injured a long time and looks like it's going to be a while. So I've continued writing my fantasy novel as well. Get it done, son. Yeah, thanks for the kick up the behind there. Yeah, it's going all right, actually. Over the last few weeks, over the last month or so, I've done a lot more than I usually do. But for me, it's a very, very slow process. I must admit, it's sort of an agonizingly slow process for me. Because I sort of um and ah and kind of agonize over the nearly all word selection. Like if it's not really, really quite good, if I'm not really quite happy with it. And then I stall loads. I need the muse to be upon me in the first place. That sounds so lame, doesn't it? But I can't just force myself to sit down and write and something good comes out. That doesn't work. I have to be in almost exactly the right frame of mind, the right mood, and have thought about it loads. And then even then, it's like getting blood from a stone. So I rewrite it and rewrite it. And like, no, that's not quite the right word. And then, I use that adjective already in this whole novel. I can't use it again. All that sort of stuff. I'm in my head a bit too much to write novels, really. I'm trying, though. I am trying. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I will eventually get it done. But, well, I will get it done. I've promised myself I will get it done. It still won't be anytime soon, I wouldn't have thought. Every now and again, like the muse visits me. And I'll just write, blah, and I'll get like 1,000 words, 2,000 words out. I'll get a couple of pages worth done. Just like, and it's quite good. Only needs a little bit of polishing. But that's rare for me. That's rare. If I could do that every day, if I could do 1,000 or 2,000 words every day, just at night, you know, before bed, maybe, after dinner, but before bed, sit down for an hour or two and just write a solid quality couple of 1,000 words. But I can't. I've tried that loads. I've tried that for years. Tried doing that for years and years and years. It doesn't work for me. It just doesn't flow. I don't know how people do it. I don't know how people write consistently quality fiction day after day after day. Quality dialogue, fictional dialogue. How do you do that? I don't. Anyway, all right, let's move on from that. Thanks for asking, though. I appreciate it. And the last Rumble rant here is Robert 42069, who says, I can confirm that there has been a black market formed in my kids' school's parents' WhatsApp group for eclipse glasses. I've got, what, the last pair of eclipse glasses, mums. I'll start the bidding at £10,000. What do you say? Okay. One enterprising individual has had enough foresight to buy hundreds from AliExpress. I don't know what AliExpress is, but okay. Yeah, well, good for them. They are very enterprising. Yeah, well done. They saw a niche in the market, capitalised. Brilliant. Story's old as time. Good on them, I suppose. I mean, could just give them out for free. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? That would be a nice thing to do, but I guess not. All right, let's do the super chat, the YouTube super chats. Oh, there's 20 plus of them, so let's get through it. Rod Knee is in at number one today. Rod_Knee is number one, is top of the pops on YouTube today. He says, it's painfully clear that most Western politicians are mere puppets of those that want to destroy civilization. Yeah, it feels that way, doesn't it? It feels exactly like that, doesn't it? That they want to destroy our civilization, the fabric of our society, our people. Yeah, it feels like that. It really does. James Lee Pevenhall says, wear your eclipse specs. Scientists say, quote, the atmosphere is too clean, quote. Less filtering. The reason why infrared is getting to the surface and causing heat. IR not being absorbed by soot in atmosphere. Oh, infrared not being absorbed by soot in the atmosphere. It's interesting. I'm going to see if I can get a pair of these glasses from somewhere. In fact, oh no, that's it. I'm sure I've got some in a drawer somewhere at home. Sure I have. Because I don't really want to look at even sort of 4% of the slither of the sun with my naked eye. Well, even if you try to, you can't for more than a moment. It's just too much. You can't really, even if you try. But if you do try, yeah, that's don't do that. Really, really, don't do that. Okay, MQSSS says, will you finally wear your monocle? You put monocular to watch the eclipse.
What, burn my eye out even faster? I know, I'll look directly at the eclipse, which would destroy your retina. I'll do it magnified. Yeah, my face is on fire now. My actual eyeball is on fire. No. Okay. It's not funny, really. That would be what a horrible image that is. Okay, Mr. Dicky Bingo, not Dinky Bingo. I misread his name. I called him Mr. Dinky Bingo. That's not correct. It's Dicky Bingo. He says, "How are you, sir?" He says, "My 97-year-old dad used to be a welder. After I've sorted his tea this evening, I'm going to get his old welding mask out and watch the eclipse, and we can watch the eclipse together." Nice. Yeah, that'll do it. Like a welder's thing. That would probably way better than one of those plastic things you can get. Cool. Yeah, good idea. Excellent idea. I'd rather that. I'd rather a full welding mask to watch it with, to be perfectly honest. All right, James Lee Pevenhall again says, "Volcanoes, Tambora, Krakatoa, St. Helens and Hunga Tunga cooled the northern atmosphere. Lots of soot ash and water droplets absorbing infrared." Yeah, yeah. Giant blasts of ash and soot and pumice into the atmosphere will have a cooling effect. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, there was a classic, it was the early 19th century, like 1820-odd, something like that, when Krakatoa went up big time down in Southeast Asia. So much soot and particles of various types in the atmosphere. But in Europe, it caused a cooling. And there was a year where they said it was a year without a summer. And it was really bad for crops, crop failing and stuff. Oh, wait, was it the late 18th century, actually? Sorry, was it the late 18th century? Anyway. Yeah. You think, oh, volcanoes release loads of lava and heat. No, only in a very, very, very close to the volcano is that true. The wider effect is a cooling one. Yeah, absolutely right. You're absolutely right. 100% right. Okay. Stu Sutton, 1977, says, "The eclipse is just Eamon Holmes blocking the sun." Get well soon, Ames. That's just a silly in-joke. We mean no disrespect by it. Get well soon. My problem with the Eamon Holmes thing, because I haven't heard any real update on his health, is that one day we might get the news that Mr. Holmes has passed away, and then all these jokes will be, in hindsight, not just in slightly bad taste, but in very bad taste. Or maybe he would have liked it, because he knows it's all in good faith and we don't mean anything by it. And the joke really is, ultimately, the comedy is derived from the fact that Eamon Holmes is a lovely person and absolutely wouldn't do anything wrong. He's completely innocent of any crimes. The comedy is derived from that he's the opposite person to Hugh Edwards. I wonder if anyone will ever let Eamon Holmes know that there's this in-joke on this show. If he does ever find out about it, I hope he takes it in good humour. Yeah, well, soon, Ames. For real. For real. Okay, TYGR8, Tiger, says, "Get Charlie Downs on the LBC, Low Seaters Breakfast Club, don't you forget about me, or Slovenia will put an embargo on all Islander issues henceforth." Charlie's been on twice, hasn't he? In fact, I talked to him just yesterday. And he will come back on. Not immediately or anything. Not like later this week or perhaps not next week. But at some point, we'll absolutely have him back on. 100%. Well, hopefully. Fingers crossed. Should do. Absolutely should do. There's no reason why we won't. But okay. All right. Tiger again says, "Also, the reason for the weird spelling of certain words is YouTube being CNT. Otherwise, it doesn't let me send that chat." Fair enough. No, fair enough, yeah. There's ways around certain things. It won't let you type, right? Or if you type it, it's just like, no, we can't send that. We're not sending that. There'll be ways around it. Nearly always. Okay, Double A Batteries 2001, that's their name, says, "Don't apologise for swearing, Bo. It's passion." No, thank you. I appreciate that. It's just this show. I agree with you. Thanks for saying that.
But this show, when we talked about the concept of it, me and Carl and a few others in Lotus Eaters talked about it at a conceptual level. One of the things was, because Cole doesn't like swearing in general, but every now and again you'll still find the odd F-bomb on the main podcast from time to time, even from Carl once in a blue moon. It's supposed to be clean anyway, Lotus Eaters, but particularly the breakfast show, because the idea is a sort of breakfast time or even drive time. And there may well be little kids in the room. It's not likely to be someone, just an adult, just watching it on their phone. There could well be a little kiddie in the room or in the car while it's playing. That was their thinking. That's the idea. So, okay. But thanks anyway, AA Batteries, for saying don't apologise for swearing. If you don't mind hearing me swear, head over to State of Politics. Where I swear loads. Me and Nate, it's just completely uncensored. So, not like every single video is chocked full of swearing, but if and when we feel like we want to, we just do. All right, okay. FUK Google 2 says, I don't know if there's a typo or something there, Put my grants in Cotswold, maybe, lol. I don't know what you mean. Put my grants in Cotswold, maybe, lol. I don't know what that means. Sorry. Let's be a bit clearer. Okay. Pete TQ6IN says, I'm an accelerationist if it means people who hold pink and yellow signs get botted by hairy barbarians from wastelands made from sand, rocks and flyers. I mean, yeah, it might be. I'm not an accelerationist in general, but on that particular element of it, maybe, yeah. So you're agreeing with me there, I think, yeah. Okay. Opening Doors 1, and thank you for the super chat. Opening Doors 1 said, would the palace have a couple of spare rooms for those poor frightened dentist doctors where all the corgis put down? Waste of real estate, really. Am I being dumb? What palace are you talking about? Would the palace have a couple of spare rooms for those poor frightened... I feel like it's really obvious what that's a reference to, something I spoke about today, but I can't remember. Harry, do you know what that would be in reference to?
No clue, sorry.
Okay. Sorry about that then. Would the palace have a couple of spare rooms? What palace? Okay. All right. I've got to move on, I'm afraid. Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, introduce a breakfast with Bo swear jar. Harry, cut to jar cam. Maybe there should be. That would be quite funny, actually. That would be quite funny if there was a jar in there every time I drop the ball. I'm like, oh, that's a fiver. Fiddle dee dee. That will be a fiver. Okay. Ryan D.F. Tobin. I never know how you want that pronounced, read out exactly, but I guess it's Ryan D.F. Tobin. Says, good morning, mate. Morning. It is a sign of regression when pleasure begins to be considered the highest principle. God bless. Yeah, throughout human civilization, yeah, when various sort of conquering peoples become lazy, weak, feckless, indulgent. Yeah, when they indulge in luxury too much. Classic example, Mongolian hordes. Once extremely hard-bitten people. Give them 3-4 generations in China with all the slaves and all the food and all the jewels they could dream of. Suddenly they're weak. Suddenly they're weak as piss. Oh, that's a fiver. Sorry, kiddies. I don't know. I don't consider the P word to be a bad one, but okay. All right. You're right, though. Ryan F. Tobin, you're quite right. Okay. Opening Doors 1 again says, I'm not up with politics. Is Burnham still jogging? I think I saw the other day or a few days ago there was another thing, like photo op where he was doing some jogging. Yeah, I think that's right. It's purely, it's absolutely performative though, isn't it? Obviously it is.
I think I did see one not too long ago, or maybe a week ago or something. Where they get all in trainers and shorts and a t-shirt. They'll get a bit of a sweat on. It takes him 30 yards to get a sweat on. Look, he's jogging, look. He's young and vital and fit and a go-getter. Yeah, right. Okay. Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job says, "It is I, Thaddeus Bungo McTickpop. And I am distraught." Oh, sorry to hear that. What have you got? What have we got? My long-faced love, the one who coos me in fluent horse, has a skeleton in her closet. She is a Labour voter. And you put, "Oh, bald one, I am distraught." Yeah, it's not ideal, is it? It's not ideal. If anyone isn't keeping up with Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job, real name Thaddeus Bungo McTiphop, if you're not keeping up with his story, he's trying to court or is courting a posh English lady. She's a Labour voter. I must admit, I've had relationships with people where our politics are really quite different, and it's a struggle the whole time. It becomes a bit of a struggle, to be honest. You end up just very, very carefully tiptoeing around not talking about it ever. That's not ideal. Tell you what's great, though, when you're with someone whose politics are the same as yours, that's really good. That's lovely. And you can both talk about it absolutely openly and freely. Bounce off each other. And it's good. You don't have to worry about it. Oh, I was going to say something, but I won't, because that will just annoy her and we'll just start an argument. It's not a great way to live. It's really not. When you're both on the same page. Good. All right. And the next one is also Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job, who says, "Apparently, I know more about UK politics than her, and she is open. How do I help her? I don't want to be too pushy. Tell me, O Lotus Eater." Well, my advice on that, broadly, is softly, softly, catchy monkey. Trying to ever really browbeat someone into changing their politics or their worldview would never really work. You actually want to change their mind as softly as possible, I would say. Just very, very gently, very, very politely, just introduce an idea, a concept. Let that sit with them for days or even weeks. Just broadly speaking, the concept, say, it's about immigration. The concept that to have endless, like an uncapped number, just the concept that there is a problem with that. That's unsustainable or doesn't make sense, or that all throughout human history that's never been the case. Whenever anything like that has been even remotely tried, it ends in absolute bloodbath and horror. And then you know, even what I've just said there is way too much. Just introduce the idea and let it sit as a seed in their mind. It may or may not take hold. It might not, it may well not. Trying to actually change someone's mind, very difficult thing. And to try and just bombard them with facts and numbers and like try and paint them morally into a corner, ethically into a corner or something, rhetorically, like flood them, won't work. It never really works. So if they're a Labour vote and you want to try and change them, it's a long process. Long process. I would just start with the broadest possible strokes of the brush and just plant the tiniest of sesame seeds in their mind and walk away. Here and there. It's about the best you can hope for. And those, as I say, those seeds may well not germinate. Or you can go the other way and you could be like, "I'm right leaning, baby. I'm right of centre. Take it or leave it. I'm not changing. If you want to be with me, then take it on board." You can go down that route. Good luck to you. It might work. You might alpha male it. "Look, I don't like your politics. Don't give me your politics. It's my politics on the highway. If you want to be in this relationship, that's the way it is." You could try that. When you're first starting out a relationship, it's a delicate thing, though, isn't it? Very, very delicate flower. It's very, very, very easily crushed. So that's not probably a good idea, is it? It's up to you. It's up to you. I've had that question a few times, though, in various different ways. How do I change, like, how do I change my dad's mind? How do I change my brother's mind? How do I change my mum's mind, my wife's mind? How do I do it? It's difficult. Unfortunately, the answer is it's difficult. Okay. Let's move on. Last half dozen or so. Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, so many dubious good deeds. Our day equals anti-Amon. Okay. Carmichael Cookie Dough Foot Job again says, what if Amon Holmes becomes a serial killer? Ah, well, I have seen that joke a number of times when I've said, Amon Holmes has done nothing wrong. All joking aside, Amon Holmes is completely innocent of any wrongdoing. And sometimes people say, that you know of. That we were aware of at this point in time. Poor Ames, get well soon, mate. Okay. Max Robe says, put migrants in Cotswolds? Question mark. That's all they say there. And then they send another one without saying anything and just give another £2. Oh, I see, right, yeah, the smearing out these foreign barbaric invaders into middle-class areas, like the Cotswolds, right? Shorthand for nice, middle-class, homogenous areas. Yeah, yeah, put them in the... Yeah, there was one earlier that was about the Cotswolds. I guess that's what that was. I get it now. Yeah, F-U-K Google 2. Who said it? Yeah, all right. Okay, what else have we got? Oh, and the very last one here. Very last one for the day. Jankus the Great, 9233, says, woke California has power in Texas, sadly. Okay. I wonder what you're referring to there exactly. What you mean? What's that in reference to? It's a shame, but yeah. Woke California has power in Texas, sadly. Okay. Not sure exactly what that's in reference to, but thanks for the... Was I talking about Texas earlier? I don't seem to recall that, but... Anyway, all right. Thank you very much for watching. That is the show. It's now 37 minutes past nine. Don't say I'm not generous. It's supposed to be a one-hour show. Got well over 50% extra here for free. 37 minutes past nine in the AM British summertime on Wednesday the 12th of August in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. Without you, it isn't a thing. My band of brothers and sisters got impeccable taste. The best people on earth, basically, watching the Bo Show live. Brilliant. Couldn't ask for more. Love you guys. Really do. All right, then. Until tomorrow, try and make the best of the day. You know, carpe diem, seize the day, if you can. If you're at liberty to use your time today, however you see fit, try and do something valuable with it. I don't want to be too preachy, but it's the most valuable thing you will ever have, and it's finite, your time on this earth. It's finite. For you. Try and do something valuable with it. Try and make it count. Seize the day. All right, then. I won't get too preachy. Until tomorrow morning, take care.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.